All right. We'd like to acknowledge my collaborators in this project that are from University of Cincinnati, RAND AIR, UCLA. One of my colleagues, Quinn Nickel Metzger, she is now at HRSA. As you, I'm sure this audience is well aware of the IOM 2003 report on unequal treatment that show disparities in not only access to care, but also outcomes to care for racial ethnic minorities. And this same report actually also discussed several strategies that could be used to reduce the gap in health disparities, and of course, cultural competency being one of those strategies. And this model by Brack and Fraser came out in an article in 2000, which shows kind of like the mechanism by which cultural competency may influence health disparities. And as you can see, cultural competency can help in ensuring that people receive appropriate services. And these, when you are able to get the appropriate services, then that will facilitate better outcomes and ultimately reduce health disparities. There are actually multiple definitions, as you can imagine, for cultural competency, cultural competence. And one of the focus has tended to be in terms of the clinical encounter or care that is responsive to diversity cultural factors such as language, beliefs, attitudes, behavior that can affect health and healthcare. There is a more recent definition by the National Quality Forum that actually focuses a little bit more on the healthcare system. And it talks about the ongoing capacity of healthcare systems, organizations, and professionals to provide for diverse patient populations high quality care that is both family and patient-centered and equitable. So this takes into account that the clinical encounter, of course, goes beyond just the physician patient, but also takes into account everything else, the setting, the context where that care is actually taking place. There are different ways in which we can assess cultural competency, and there is the organizational level. The CCATH, as it was mentioned before, it's one tool that actually Jan Dreschlin is here. She has collaborated with me on that project where we basically operationalize the class standards in the hospital context. So hospitals could actually assess where they are in terms of adherence to the class standards. But also, besides the organizational side, there is also getting from the patient perspective. And that's where we get into instruments like the CAHPS. But the CAHPS has been limited in terms of the domains, themes that it covers. Traditionally, it has not covered certain domains that may be of particular interest or importance to diverse populations. And that's what I'm going to be talking about. And that's where the PAC came into in terms of filling that gap in the literature. And there's, of course, measuring cultural competency from the provider or professional perspective as well. This area has not been my focus. My focus has been more on the organizational and patient side. Now, just to give you a little bit of historical background on CAHPS and cultural competency, the first wave of CAHPS, CAHPS 1, there was a lot of emphasis on looking at racial ethnic differences in the different CAHPS measures. Then, as I mentioned, there was we started to see that there was a need to have more cultural competency domains, themes, and CAHPS, and that's where we started developing these measures that I'm going to be talking about. And then finally, with CAHPS 3, the idea is going to be to actually incorporate it into the CAHPS family of instruments. And this kind of shows you the conceptual development of the survey, going from having a conceptual model to the item development, translation into Spanish, cognitive testing, and then finally the field testing. And I'm going to be talking a little bit about each of these phases. First, starting with the culturally competent care in terms of a conceptual framework, we look at the literature and we try to identify domains that interface between patient, provider, and healthcare system factors. And we were able to identify six domains, one of them relating to patient-provider communication, respect for patient preferences or shared decision-making, experiences leading to trust or distrust, experiences with discrimination, health literacy strategies, and then finally, language services. I should mention that there is a concept of linguistic competence that I'm sure you probably have heard. And when you talk about linguistic competence, it actually would include both health literacy as well as language services. But in this case, we split it in two different domains for a reason that I'll mention in a minute. But this is how these different domains look in terms of different aspects or subdomains that we were going to be looking at. And as you can see with the patient-provider communication, there was actually quite a bit already in the CAPS, but we found that there were certain areas that were lacking, and one of them was preventive care, asking about the provision of preventive care, as well as the use of alternative medicine. That was one area. Then shared decision-making, in terms of asking about patient preferences, linguistic competency, as I mentioned, including both the access to language services as well as health literacy, then experiences relating to trust, relating to discrimination. In terms of discrimination, we included race, ethnicity, insurance, and language as areas in which a patient may experience or perceive experiencing discrimination. Like I said, beyond the conceptual framework, we then went on to developing the actual items. We started with a literature review of the existing measures. Then we started either adapting, modifying measures that were in the public domain. And then for those that we were not able to identify in the literature, then we went ahead and wrote new items. So basically, we ended with an item set that had 47 items, and these are the domains with their respective items. As you can see, health literacy was not part of the item set because there was a whole separate project that ARC actually funded on health literacy. But if any of you is interested in that particular domain, I can give you information about the person that actually oversaw that separate project. The next phase, once we had the item set, then it was translating into Spanish. And we use a modified translation by committee approach. This is actually the approach that now ARC is basically endorsing as far as a translation is concerned, where we have two forward translation using certified translators. Then we have a committee that is made up of the translators and bilingual reviewers. Usually it's people that have been involved, bilingual reviewers that have been involved in the development of CAPS, that also would include different subgroups within a language. So for example, in Spanish, you would want to have a representation of different subgroups like Mexican, Cuban, Puerto Rican, etc. So that was the next phase in the process, the translation. Once we had the instrument translated, then we went into the cognitive interview. And usually with the cognitive interview, you want to make sure that the patient respondents are really understanding the key concept as you intended to have that concept measure, as well as are there terms that are problematic in terms of the response scale. And for the Spanish one more specifically, we also wanted to assess the appropriateness of the Spanish translation as well. And then we use, of course, those findings to revise and refine the instrument. And for the cognitive testing, we use what is called semi-structured interview with scripted probes, concurrent think-aloud method to interview, which basically means that the patient is allowed answering the question. They read the question, they answer the question, and then you can probe and see in terms of different terms what do they understand when they hear that term? And that's the idea of, again, trying to make sure that the item is measuring what you intended to measure. So we had 18 interviews conducted, 9 in Spanish and 9 in English. We tried to have a geographic diversity as well as demographics in other areas like age, race, gender, level of education, and then having also representation of different Hispanic subgroups in the cognitive interviews. So based on the cognitive interviews, we were able to find that the survey, in terms of the experiences that we were trying to assess, made sense for the respondents. Generally, they understood the measures that we were trying to assess. There were some problems with the skip patterns, especially for Spanish speakers. And also, of course, we identified some translation issues, items that were confusing or difficult to understand. And that's, of course, part of this cognitive interview process. And so we used that information to shorten the item set and drop items that were either redundant or were not measuring what we intended to. So finally, we get into the field test. Now we have this shortened item set. We field tested it with 6,000 managed care, Medicaid managed care enrollees. And this was a random sample from 2 healthcare plans, one in California, one in New York. And we used a mixed mode. We had first was the mail, followed by the phone. This was a very interesting process because it was very challenging, actually, to get people to respond. As you can see, we had multiple steps. And the second stage of the phone survey, we offer a monetary incentive of $10. And even then, we were only able to achieve a 26% response rate. Now, I had a colleague that she used an alternative strategy, and it was beforehand sending $2 with each survey. And that somehow that produced a better response rate. So keep that in mind when you do field tests. And I guess that's called a guilt factor, right? It's like when you get those rewards from different charities, right, and then you want to donate. So continuing on the field tests, we basically limited to people that had a personal doctor that had also visited that doctor for in the prior 12 months. We had a relatively even distribution across the different subgroups except Hispanics, where we had 34%, but that's because we oversample Hispanics so that we would get more Spanish surveys and could do separate analyses by the Spanish language. So we did the psychometric analysis, we did exploratory, confirmatory factor analysis, multi-trait scaling analysis, internal consistency, and multi-group confirmatory factor analysis. In terms of the first step was actually regression analysis, where we did convergent validity. And here, what we wanted to see is whether these new measures, if they correlated with existing CAPS measures, and more specifically, an overall doctor rating. Okay, so that was the first step that we did. The second step, as I mentioned, was the exploratory factor analysis, which kind of confirmed around our original conceptual framework of these different domains. And as you can see, for doctor communication, we had 4 different domains, one on positive behavior, the other on negative behavior, health promotion, and alternative medicine, shared decision making, equitable treatment, and trust. So those were the final set of domains that we had for the survey. We did also multi-trait scaling, which actually helps in determining whether the items are really correlated with that scale more than with other scales. So it assesses item discrimination. And then we had the typical Cronbach alphas. We did have some domains that had a relatively low alpha, but that was because there were only 2 items in those domains, and that usually represents a challenge in getting an adequate alpha. We did also multi-group confirmatory factor analysis. We were able to do it for three of the groups and for four of the domains, and we found that there was measurement equivalence across those groups and for those domains. The results, and we also did actually a separate psychometric analysis of the language access services, and we have a separate domain for that as well. And we found that access to language services was positively correlated with the overall doctor rating, as well as all the other domains that I have mentioned before. So in conclusions, in terms of the CAPS, cultural competency item set, previously known as the PAC, it assesses culturally competent care from the patient perspective, following a conceptual framework as well as cognitive and other testing, demonstrates adequate measurement properties, addresses aspects of care that are important to patients, ratings of care, especially doctor rating of care, which is what we assess. So for hospitals or healthcare organizations, more broadly speaking, that want to improve their CAPS ratings, they may want to implement quality improvement strategies that may be aimed at addressing some of these domains that we measure. And we are recommending this item set as a supplement to the CAPS family of instruments. And then finally, just want to acknowledge the different funders, ARC, the Commonwealth Fund, as well as some of the key people that have helped us through the process. Thanks so much.